Can we expect all of our votes to be counted today? There have already been reports of early voting problems, long lines, malfunctioning voting machines. With me now is Michael Waldman, director of the NYU School of Law's Brennan Center for Justice, which is monitoring voting problems and voter suppression this election season. Welcome to our show.
My pleasure.
A record turnout is predicted for this election. Everyone on my staff has reported waiting for hours to vote this morning, and two of my producers had to contend with broken machines. One of them actually wound up writing on a paper ballot. Wasn't the Board of Election alerted that this was going to be a record turnout?
Well, one presumes they were reading the newspapers like everybody else, and often it's the case that where you have long lines and problems, it's because of a surprised election machinery, election officials. They shouldn't have been surprised. And I think you heard Mayor Bloomberg screaming that they weren't ready and that they turned down all kinds of opportunities for help. The Board of Elections, the way it's structured in New York, is something of a patronage fest and is one of the many places in the country where there needs to be a better way to run an election.
Well, the patronage would have been from Bloomberg and mostly from Governor Pataki, wouldn't it? Or
I think it was the Republican wing of the Republican Party that had these two people in particular. But it's, if you think about it, it's really crazy that we have elections run by partisans of either party, whether here or Florida or Ohio. Other countries don't do it that way.
Is this an argument also for early voting? Because I'm sure that in some of the states where there's been early voting, a lot of the pressure has been taken off today.
I think a lot of people here in New York and New Jersey and those of us who are not in places that have had so many contested elections lately, we look at the reports of early voting around the country, and it looks pretty appealing. A place like Colorado, roughly half the people have voted already by Election Day. It does take the burden off the system on Election Day. It makes it easier for people to vote. A lot of people have a hard time getting off from work on Election Day.
And we also, we're very pleased that we've had this very successful registration campaign, but I'm assuming that new voters slow things down because they're unfamiliar with the voting process.
Well, new voters slow things down because they're unfamiliar, but they also slow things down because there are problems with names being on the voter lists. And in the weeks leading up to this election, one of the main concerns that we at the Brennan Center had was, on the one hand, this wonderful surge of people joining the process and voting for the first time, but there was a very concerted effort in a lot of states to keep those new voters from being on the rolls, something called no match, no vote, which is the idea that if there's any data error in a voter's file, even if it's just someone who typed the name in wrong, well, the voter must be committing fraud and they're kicked off the rolls. And there was an effort to kick 200,000 people off the rolls in Ohio. So a lot of people are showing up and discovering they're not on the rolls.
And then there was a voter purge that was reversed in Colorado just the other day.
Well, that's the thing that's the happy news. There was an unprecedented effort to kick people off the rolls, but there was also an unprecedented pushback by voting rights groups that actually has succeeded in stopping that, so that in Colorado, we and other civil rights groups filed lawsuit and got 27,000 voters who had been purged wrongly to be reinstated. We need a better way to register voters, so that kind of thing can't happen.
We also have different ways of voting throughout the country, even throughout within a state. Now, what happens in other countries? How did the British vote? How did the Dutch vote? How did the French vote?
Well, we're in the middle of a major study of that right now. The fact is they all do it in different ways, but they generally do it better. The voting machines don't have the problems. You have much higher turnout. Even in this election, as wonderful as it is, you may get up to 65 or 70%. Well, in France, when turnout fell to 85%, and Sarkozy was elected, that was considered a scandale that it had fallen that low. The key difference in those countries is they don't require voters themselves to go get themselves registered. They have the government runs the voter registration process, keeps the lists, and we could actually now move to that in this country. That's what we're going to be pushing for after the election. It should be a system where government keeps the list, you're automatically registered, say when you turn 18, you stay on the list permanently even if you move, And that would add up to 50 million voters to the rolls. And you just wouldn't have all the shenanigans and opportunity for mischief that you have.
But we have these other problems. We have some people are still filling out paper ballots. Others are punching paper ballots. Others are doing the kinds of voting machines we see here in New York City with the lever. Then there are the electronic machines. And every one of those seems to have problems built into it. Isn't there somebody who has a system that's actually guaranteed to work well?
Well, there's actually some good news on that front. If you look back at 2000, when you had, of course, what happened in Florida, but MIT studied that election and concluded that between 4 and 6 million votes were lost nationwide that year. It wasn't just Florida. There's been a move toward modernizing the voting machines, even electronic voting around the country. The problem, of course, has been that those electronic machines are insecure, but if you can make them secure with paper records and receipts and that sort of thing, it really is a better system. Now, we here in New York, we all love, if nothing for nostalgic reasons, those big clunky lever machines. And
but they break down. They've been breaking down since 6 o'clock this morning.
Well, they don't make the parts anymore. And this is something I learned from Professor Sam Zakharoff of NYU. Why we have these machines. It used to be the case back when people really had ballot boxes with paper ballots that if you went down to the East River on election day, you would see ballot boxes floating downstream because the way people fixed elections in those days was the Democrats would go to the Republican precinct and take the ballot boxes and throw them in the river. So the key thing when they designed these machines was they had to be heavy enough that you couldn't throw them in the river. And that's the major thing about why these machines are the way they are.
Well, I probably like them. They're very easy to do.
They, you know, and you bring your kids in and they pull a lever and as I plan to do with my kids. That's all great, but we can have a much more modern system. But again, this is electronic voting is much better in this country than it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago. They really have made improvements in a lot of places.
So do you think we should have a uniform system across the country?
Look, you walk into any Starbucks and a grande is 3 shots of espresso. It's crazy that we have 13,000 separate jurisdictions running their own elections. We should have national voter registration legislation and a national standard for the machines without question.
Is cost one of the reasons people resist?
Cost is one of the
reasons. Or is it that they really want to confuse people in some cases?
Well, the local officials resist because of cost. And they don't like having what they call unfunded mandates where Washington tells them to do something and then doesn't give them any money. There were $3 billion spent when they moved the whole system to electronic voting all around the country, except the states didn't use all the money. And I do think that if we move to a system of universal voter registration, that the national government should put up some cash to help states do it. But it's really not that expensive. You know, the great thing about that $700 billion bailout is it makes everything else look cheap in comparison.
My guest is Michael Waldman, director of NYU School of Law's Brennan Center for Justice. They're monitoring voting problems and voter suppression during this election season. What's the definition of voter suppression?
Voter suppression is when you have an effort to keep someone else from voting. And sometimes it's deliberate, and sometimes it's just because of chaos and ineptitude. But unfortunately, very often, it's deliberate. And you really did see a pretty deliberate effort in this election in the face of this wave of new voters to try to keep a lot of them from voting. And unfortunately, it tends to be targeted at young people. It tends to be targeted at people of color. And it's kind of hand-to-hand combat out there in the states. As I say, most of those fights have been waged before Election Day. So today, we're not seeing so many problems like that at the polls.
Well, there's that anecdotal story that The Simpsons dealt with where somebody tries to vote for Barack Obama and the machine keeps on saying, thank you for voting for John McCain. And I've heard similar kinds of stories over the past years. Is that actually happening?
That's called vote flipping. And sometimes you do have machines, if you think about any touchscreen, sometimes you touch it and it doesn't, if it's not calibrated right, the touch doesn't go where it wants to. And those, again, can be fixed if you have something like a paper receipt. And the key thing for voters who are listening, who might be voting on those machines, the kind you can't throw in the river, or I guess they are the kind you can throw in the river, is make sure that you, if it seems to be voting for someone other than you want it to be voting for, don't just say, well, that's close enough. You have the ability to make sure that it works. And if the machine breaks down, and that's the biggest problem, is not so much someone pushing a button and voting the wrong candidate. If a machine breaks down, you have a right to an emergency paper ballot. Don't take no for an answer at the polls.
Is creating a situation where it's really hard to vote because the lines are so long and people get discouraged, is that a form of voter suppression?
I think it is, especially if it's deliberate. And there's something called challenges, which is basically under a lot of state laws, political parties can go into a polling place and say, hey, you, I don't think you're really eligible to vote. And that there was word, for example, we don't know if it's happening today, that in Michigan, the GOP was planning on challenging the registrations of people who had home foreclosures because, hey, they don't live there anymore. Which, you know, even Herbert Hoover had never thought of that one. Even if it's not successful, the more challenges, the more chaos, and the longer lines. And we have had a problem in past elections where there are too few machines in inner-city neighborhoods. In Ohio in 2004, I don't think that the machines just had a code in them saying vote for Bush. I just think there weren't enough machines in Cleveland, and there were plenty in the suburbs.
That was also a politicized voting process, wasn't it? The state's attorney general had made it clear that he really wanted one of the candidates to win.
Well, Ohio, the Secretary of State was a man named Ken Blackwell, who was chairing the Bush campaign and running the election, and actually was the Republican candidate for governor 2 years after that. He kept doing things like requiring that the ballots be a certain heft of paper and things that really were just designed to mess up the system. Another thing that's gotten a lot better is 12 new secretaries of state were elected nationwide 2 years ago on voter protection platforms. And really in those states, Ohio being an example, it really looks like things are actually a lot better than they were.
One of the states that's constantly cited as being hotly contested and with a possibility that Barack Obama might actually win a so-called red state is Virginia. Some have expressed concern that Virginia could be this year's version of Florida in 2000. And this is with a Democrat as governor, but who seems to be doing everything possible to make it as difficult as possible to vote.
Well, sometimes these are situations where the governor doesn't have that much power because these elections really are being run by local officials. You're absolutely right. Virginia is one of those states where they're having many, many more people vote than they have had ever before. So Virginia is a place where there appear to be breakdowns, where the machines are breaking down, where there are long lines. A Brennan Center study concluded that Virginia was one of the least prepared states in the country. And you also have a situation where in the schools there, the officials of some of the colleges were telling the students that if they registered to vote, they would lose their financial aid, which is not true because, hey, you live here, you need to live where your parents are. There were a lot of shenanigans there, and they don't seem to have enough voting machines in the right places. So the long lines in Virginia seem at least a function of mix-ups and problems as much as anything else.
But the governor says he won't provide backup paper ballots. He said, you wait in line for Starbucks, be prepared to wait in line to vote.
Well, you know, I think you're seeing that all over the country. I guess the Board of Elections official that I understand in New York City said, well, in New York, you have to wait in line 2 hours for a hamburger. So it's okay to wait that long to vote. And all I can say is I don't think I've ever waited 2 hours in line for a hamburger, not even at the Shake Shack. The fact is we should be happy that so many people want to vote, but we ought to have a customer service mentality. We ought to make this easier. We ought to have early voting. We ought to have maybe election day for 2 days. It's crazy that we make this an obstacle course the way we do.
Well, in many countries, they vote over weekends. People have suggested that we do the same sort of thing, that Tuesday seems to be a very weird choice for an election day. Others have suggested that we vote over a whole week.
I think,
are we too impatient to do that sort of thing?
Well, the best argument,
I can't imagine Tom Brokaw saying, well, based on the first 2 days voting, we're projecting so-and-so is going to win.
Chuck Todd on television would have to move a cot into the studio. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is we vote on one day, on a Tuesday, the first Tuesday in November, because in 1845, it's not in the Constitution, Congress passed a law that set that as the election day. And the reason was that back then, voting had to be after the harvest but before winter, and it couldn't be on Sunday because that was the Sabbath, and it couldn't be on a Wednesday because that was market day, and you had to have enough time to ride your horse and buggy to and from the county seat, so it had to be a Tuesday in November. Well, that was not crazy. That was convenient for the farmers in 1845. We ought to make it convenient for people now.
Well, the president used to take office in March because it took a long time to get to Washington. We changed that.
It is one of the things that that we ought to change. I've heard some election officials say that they get nervous about keeping the voting machines in a polling place overnight, that there would be opportunities for mischief. And that's the only good reason I can think of not to do it.
A listener says we do millions of transactions on our ATM machines all the time. Why can't we just have the equivalent for voting?
I would be nervous about that. ATM transactions are not anonymous. There's someone on the other end saying, hey, you know, you don't actually have $1 million in your account. You can't take it out. Whereas voting is supposed to be anonymous, and nobody would ever know whether someone voted in their name or if votes were added, and voters wouldn't be able to have that paper record. So I would be quite nervous about that.
Another state that is in play that has some problems is Pennsylvania. People have filed lawsuits against election officials because they say they haven't stocked enough paper ballots to prepare for the expected high turnout. Are backup paper ballots a good enough solution?
They're not good enough, but they're the bare minimum. Again, it's important for listeners who might be hearing this to understand. A backup paper ballot is a real ballot, and it's counted on election day. And if you go and you're there, you're eligible to vote, but the machine breaks down or something like that, you have a right to a backup paper ballot. That's different from a provisional ballot, as it's called. The provisional ballot is something that gets counted later. You have to, and they're not always counted. And
that's because they're not sure whether you actually have the right to vote or not.
That's right. And sometimes you have to go prove later on, bring some ID or something like that.
What kind of ID is acceptable?
Well, for provisional ballot, I don't remember whether it's needs to be a government ID or it can be something broader like a utility bill or something like that. But the fact of the matter is, provisional ballots are very often, they're like a placebo vote. You give them to the voter and they feel good and they walk away, and then for some reason it's not counted. And those should only be used if utterly necessary. And the one thing I would say is there is a nonpartisan voter helpline called 1-866-OUR-VOTE. That's 1-866-OUR-VOTE. It's been getting tens of thousands of calls from around the country. And if you show up at the polls and they say you're not on the list and you know you're registered, call that number and they will tell you what to do.
A listener has an objection to the idea of having a national voter registration. He says it would be, in effect, a national identity card. And some people are concerned about that sort of thing.
Well, we have voting by state. There's no reason you couldn't continue to have voting lists kept by state. In fact, under federal law right now, states, for the first time, have computerized voter lists. What we don't have is voter lists that include everybody who's eligible. And there's just no reason that when you turn 18 and you sign up for the draft if you're a man, or there's all other kinds of things, that you aren't automatically registered to vote too. And if that were the case, again, it would add up to 50 million people to the rolls. And, you know, you hear people complaining about ACORN and about problems with voter registration, and I think those are very overblown. I should mention there's no evidence whatsoever that anybody whose name was improperly registered by ACORN or anybody else is actually voting. Even Mickey Mouse wouldn't be able to vote unless he had ID, even in Orlando, you know, where they know him.
And even if Donald Duck came there and vouched for him.
Yeah, exactly. Because new voters, first-time voters, have to show ID. But the fact of the matter is, for anybody who's worried about private voter registration, the answer is have the government keep the list, and then you won't have any potential for problems.
My guest is Michael Waldman, director of NYU School of Law's Brennan School Center for Justice. One of the problems that we had in the 2000 election was bad ballot design. Are we seeing more examples of that sort of thing this year?
Well, you know, the butterfly ballot in Florida helped make George W. Bush president, and we spent $3 billion, moved the whole country to electronic voting, except New York, and we forgot to do much about ballot design. And we did a study this summer that showed that it's still a huge problem, which you can see on our website, brennancenter.org.
You've put together legal teams in case there seems to be some significant fraud in the elections. How does that work?
Well, the nonpartisan voter groups, including the Brennan Center and coordinated by the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and actually a lot of law firms from around the city and around the country, are at this help desk, 1-866-OUR-VOTE. And they are giving advice and preparing to take legal action if necessary. And you've had a lot of the efforts to kick voters off the rolls were pushed back not by luck but by squads of lawyers out there fighting it.
A listener says that we should all use Oregon's all-mail voting system. Is that a good system in your mind?
I think vote by mail is okay. It shouldn't be the only way people vote. Among other things, you're trusting too much to the post office. And a lot of neighborhoods actually have worse mail delivery than other neighborhoods. People who live in housing projects know that they sometimes don't get their mail. So I think anything that gets more people voting, anything that makes it easier for people to vote is good, but it's not really a kind of a one solution solves every problem.
Well, I guess if it all doesn't work out, we'll just go to the Supreme Court and they'll solve the problem.
You only need one vote there.
Michael Waldman is director of NYU School of Law's Brennan Center for Justice. I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.